Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week at this time by Sunsounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. This episode, on Thursday, October 2nd, 2025, will feature articles that appeared in the Arizona Mirror over the past week. Since this program airs only once a week, some of the articles may be a bit dated and breaking stories may be added toward the end. The Arizona Mirror is an independent publication which sources stories from all over the state and the nation. We will focus primarily on stories that impact people in Arizona. In this week's episode, these are some of the stories we'll be reading. AZ Supreme Court allows GOP lawmakers to challenge voter-approved dark money disclosure law. Arizona cracks down on crypto ATM scams that cost residents $177 million. GOP lawmaker calls for Dem Congresswoman to be executed for urging Trump protests. Trump launches AI program to deny Medicare services in Arizona while criticizing insurers. Arizona COVID vaccine rollout hits snags despite state standing order workaround. And let's get started. Our first story, AZ Supreme Court allows GOP lawmakers to challenge voter-approved dark money disclosure law. Ruling allows the legislators' case against Prop 211 to continue, despite 70% voter approval in 2022. By Jared McDonald Evoy, September 29, 2025. The legal battle over a voter-approved anti-dark money law passed in 2022 will continue, as the Arizona Supreme Court Monday said Republican lawmakers have a right to legally challenge the law, but the court did not rule on its constitutionality. Monday's decision comes as the court has been weighing another challenge to the law brought by proponents of anonymous campaign spending who are challenging the constitutionality of the law. Monday's ruling was on a case brought by Republican state lawmakers who claim that the voter-approved proposition takes away their legislative powers, violating the Constitution. Since voters in 2022 overwhelmingly approved Prop 211, the Voters' Right to Know Act, proponents of the anonymous campaign spending that has transformed American elections over the past 15 years have challenged its constitutionality. GOP elected officials and the law's deep-pocketed conservative opponents believe that forcing disclosure of the source of public spending limits the free speech of wealthy people who want to influence voters, but don't want those voters to know who is trying to persuade them. Monday's ruling reverses a previous trial court's decision that the GOP legislators hadn't been harmed and thus didn't have standing to sue. The case now goes back to a trial court judge for, quote, further review. Previous House Speaker Ben Thoma and Senate President Warren Peterson, Republican of Gilbert, originally filed the lawsuit alleging that Proposition 211 is unconstitutional because it violated legislative authority. Thoma is no longer a legislator and has been replaced in the case by Steve Montenegro, the current House Speaker. They asked the court to immediately block the law so it could not be used to unveil the sources of campaign spending in the upcoming 2024 election that would have remained anonymous in previous years. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays, Secretary of State Adrian Fontes, and the Citizens Clean Elections Commission, which is charged with enforcing the dark money disclosures, all defend the new law. More than 70% of voters approved Prop 211, which changed Arizona law to require that any persons or organization making campaign media expenditures of more than $50,000 to statewide elections or $25,000 to local elections must disclose the original source of any contributions totaling more than $5,000. Attorneys representing the lawmakers have argued that the act has no guardrails and no oversight from the legislature. The leaders assert a serious separation of powers dispute, and as abundantly illustrated by the cases cited by both the majority and dissent raising such issues, that presents a constitutional rather than political or policy question, just as Clint Bolick wrote in the majority opinion. Bolick and the majority, the court split 5-2, concluded that lawmakers should be able to bring a claim as they have, quote, inalienable power when it comes to the legislature that could be superseded by the law. However, that scenario has not happened, and that point was argued by both sides. The dissent also contends the asserted injury is not tangible or ripe because the commission has not yet exercised its delegated authority in a way that violates separation of powers, Bolick said. That is akin to arguing that if your credit card is stolen, you can file suit only when the thief uses it. The legislative power belongs solely to the legislature and the people. If it is given away, in whole or part, it presents an institutional injury that creates standing. Chief Justice Ann Scott Timmer and retired Justice Rebecca White Birch, who heard the case in place of Justice Maria Elena Cruz, who recused herself, disagreed. Catchy, but the analogy falls apart upon inspection, Timmer wrote in a dissent. Unlike the credit card thief, the commission has not taken anything or violated a law. It was simply delegated authority by the people, acting in their legislative capacity. At most, the commission is only poised to take legislative authority. Until the commission exercises that authority, however, it is more like a person who is given an opportunity to steal a credit card, but has not yet done so. And just as the would-be victim lacks standing to sue that thief, so do the leaders here. Timmer also argued that allowing Republican lawmakers the right to sue merely because they allege a potential future violation unlocks a door for future legislatures seeking to make an end run around the Arizona Constitution's Voter Protection Act in an attempt to void laws enacted by initiatives or referenda by merely alleging a plausible separation of powers or non-delegation violation based on theoretical future events. Because this may thwart the people's will, we should require a tangible injury to the legislature before granting it standing to challenge voter-enacted laws, Timmer wrote. The other case before the court that still has not been decided was brought by the anti-abortion advocacy group Center for Arizona Policy and the Arizona Free Enterprise Club, a dark money nonprofit. They were joined by two anonymous donors who alleged they feared harassment and violence if their political spending was disclosed. They argued that mandating disclosure of the source of political spending violates the Arizona Constitution's protections of free speech, association, privacy, and separation of powers. Lower courts have rejected those arguments. And that concludes this first story. AZ Supreme Court allows GOP lawmakers to challenge voter-approved dark money disclosure law. Next up, Arizona cracks down on crypto ATM scams that cost residents $177 million. By Jared McDonald Evoy, September 26, 2025. A law aimed at preventing cryptocurrency scams by adding new regulations to crypto kiosks goes into effect today and gives added protections to those who use them. Arizona has seen an increase in the number of people getting scammed via cryptocurrency, so much so that Attorney General Chris Mays issued a letter of support to the Yavapai County Sheriff's Office last November in its efforts to crack down on the fraud. The scam involves the use of crypto kiosks, which allow a person to convert cash into Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies that can be found at some businesses or malls. Scammers often pretend to be a loved one, a government agency, or gain a person's trust in some other way before asking them to deposit a large sum of money into one of these cryptocurrency ATMs. In a press release Friday about the law going into effect, Mays celebrated its common sense protections, but warned that scams involving cryptocurrency is something that still needs to be addressed. Last year, Arizonans lost an astounding $177 million in their hard-earned savings to cryptocurrency scammers. This is a good first step, but we need to do even more to protect Arizona seniors from these persistent criminals, Mays said. The Cryptocurrency Kiosk License Fraud Protection Law lowers the daily transaction maximums, increases warnings on the machines, and requires transaction receipts. Operators of the machines also must issue a refund to victims of fraud. The law was sponsored by Representative David Marshall, a Republican from Snowflake, who told the Senate Judiciary and Elections Committee earlier this year that his constituents in northern Arizona would drive down to Phoenix to deposit money into one of these ATMs as part of one of those scams, only to find their money gone when they got home. Last year, YCSO and the AG issued letters asking business owners in Yavapai County to put warnings on the machines, similar to those displayed around gift cards at stores, due to the proliferation of a similar type of scam in which victims purchase gift cards and send them to scammers. In 2023, Americans lost $5.6 billion in cryptocurrency-related scams, with the majority of victims being the elderly. Crypto heists have become a growing concern, with North Korean hackers recently making the largest haul of $1.5 billion in cryptocurrency. But other types of scams involving artificial intelligence are also seeing large sums of cash being stolen. Last year, scammers using deepfakes convinced finance workers to send them $25 million. The law limits daily transactions to $2,000 a day for new customers and $10,500 for existing customers. Any new customer who reports to an ATM operator that they have been a victim of fraud within 30 days will be required to get a full refund. There are an estimated 600 cryptocurrency ATMs in the state, according to the AG's office. The Scottsdale Police Department has reported $5 million lost by residents due to cryptocurrency scams this year alone. Due to the lack of regulations and traceability of cryptocurrency, scammers have flocked to it as a means of fraud. That concludes this story. Arizona cracks down on crypto ATM scams that cost residents $177 million. We move on to GOP lawmaker calls for Dem Congresswoman to be executed for urging Trump protests. Representative John Gillette escalates rhetoric despite colleagues' calls for civility after recent political violence. By Jared McDonald Evoy, September 25, 2025. An Arizona Republican lawmaker on Wednesday called for the execution of a Democratic congresswoman because she urged people upset with President Donald Trump to protest in the streets. Kingman Republican Representative John Gillette wrote on the social media site X that U.S. Representative Pramila Jayapal, a Democrat from Washington, was calling for the government to be overthrown and should be hanged. Until people like this that advocate for the overthrow of the American government are tried, convicted, and hanged, it will continue, Gillette said in response to a video of Jayapal. That clip, uploaded to X, was from a longer video which was posted online in March that is part of Jayapal's, quote, Resistance Lab series, in which she and others discuss protest movements and nonviolent actions. The session in question featured a speaker who studied political violence and spoke about nonviolence. The post Gillette responded to claimed that Jayapal was making a call to violence because she said protesters should be strike-ready and street-ready. The Arizona Mirror watched the video in its entirety and found no calls to violence or advocating for overthrowing the government. It was focused on nonviolent resistance to Trump and advising people on how to do that. In contrast, Gillette has expressed support for the Trump supporters who stormed the U.S. Capitol in January 2021, who violently assaulted police officers and broke down doors and windows in order to access the building so they could stop Congress from certifying the 2020 election. In several posts on X, he called the 1,600 or so people who were prosecuted and since pardoned by Trump for their actions that day, quote, political prisoners. He refused to answer questions when the Arizona Mirror reached him by phone on Thursday. "You guys aren't known for putting out accurate information," Gillette said. "The comment is what it is. It is on the post. You can see what it is. There is no hidden meaning, no nothing. You report whatever you want to report. We are done. Stop calling me. Have a good day." Gillette then hung up, and he did not respond to follow-up questions texted to him about the post. A representative for Jayapal said she is out of the country and currently unable to comment. One of Gillette's Democratic colleagues in the Arizona House of Representatives said the Kingman Republicans' call for an elected official to be put to death for exercising their First Amendment right was appalling. The Congresswoman was clearly talking about nonviolent protests and legal strikes, absolutely nothing violent, Assistant House Democratic Leader Nancy Gutierrez said in a statement to the Mirror. Representative Gillette misconstrued her words to once again put a target on a political opponent's back, calling for her to be hanged. What will he need to say before Republican leadership in the House takes action? This is language that leads to violence. I'm tired of him putting us and our families at risk. Gillette's recent comments come after some of his Democratic colleagues have voiced concerns over his rhetoric after he castigated them for calling for civility and unity in the wake of the killing of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. In a message to all his fellow lawmakers that included a racial slur, he placed blame for political violence solely on Democrats and the political left, accusing them of stoking hate and violence against Republicans. "The tone was set by your party. Unity is no longer an option," Gillette wrote to the 59 other members of the State House. "We handed you an olive branch and you broke it. Your party invited the radicals to the table and they took over. Now you own them. As the Jays did at Pearl Harbor, radical Muslims on 9/11, your party has woken the sleeping giant." He has also recently come under fire for Islamophobic comments that led to an ethics complaint that was ultimately dismissed. The Republican chair of the House Ethics Committee said that Gillette had a First Amendment right to say whatever he wanted on social media without consequence. Jeff Charlotte, a professor at Dartmouth and author of The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War, said he was wary to call Gillette's words a direct call to violence, but said the comments were still worrying and part of a larger trend. "I think it is grotesque what he is saying. I would be afraid that someone would maybe act on it," Charlotte said, adding that if he were a Democratic politician who had to work with Gillette, he may be nervous. "If he got anywhere near the congresswoman he is targeting, I'd want security to take notice." Discussions around political violence have reached a fever pitch in recent weeks, with high-profile conservatives laying blame on their political opponents and their rhetoric. "We are having a punctuated burst, a historically high period of political violence that I would call America's era of violent populism," Dr. Robert Pape, a professor of political science at the University of Chicago who has studied political violence for 30 years, told the Mirror. In June, Pape penned an op-ed in the New York Times saying that the country was on the brink of an extremely violent era in American politics. "We are now in the eye of the storm I was worried about," Pape said. Pape runs the Chicago Project on Security and Threats, a nonpartisan research center. In May, Pape's organization found that 40% of Democrats supported the use of force to remove Trump and 25% of Republicans supported the use of the military against anti-Trump protests, double what the numbers were last fall. That violent rhetoric used by Gillette also could have an unintended consequence on him and his political allies, Pape said. It is going to push those supporters of Jayapal to become more defiant and probably more supportive of political violence against Republicans, he explained. Whatever his intentions are, it is increasing the danger to Republicans. Charlotte said that, although the intention behind Jayapal's words were easy to discern, this is not the right time for ambiguous language. Politicians, he said, should aim to speak to the public in a more truthful and concise manner. They need to know the way it boomerangs back in a negative way to their own community, Pape said, adding that he'd advise them to be more like Kirk's widow, Erica. At the memorial service for her husband, she said she forgives the man who killed her husband, adding that the answer to hate is not hate. Erica Kirk offered an olive branch here, and we need more olive branches here, Pape said. That concludes this story. GOP lawmaker calls for Dem congresswoman to be executed for urging Trump protests. And we now have a follow-up to the story that we just read. National Dems call for reprisals against AZ GOP lawmaker for, quote, unconscionable call to hang colleague. Arizona Republican leaders so far have been silent on Representative John Gillette's call for a Democratic congresswoman to be executed by Jared McDonald Evoy, September 29, 2025. Democratic leaders in Congress are calling for Republican leaders to reject violent rhetoric by an Arizona Republican lawmaker who called for the execution of a Democratic congresswoman because she urged people upset with President Donald Trump to peacefully protest in the streets. Kingman Republican Representative John Gillette wrote on the social media site X on September 25th that U.S. Representative Pramila Jayapal, a Democrat from Washington, was calling for the government to be overthrown and should be hanged. Until people like this that advocate for the overthrow of the American government are tried and convicted and hanged, it will continue, Gillette said in response to a video of Jayapal. The top Democrat in the U.S. House of Representatives on Monday called on the Republicans who control the Arizona House of Representatives to hold Gillette accountable for his, quote, dangerous words. These dangerous comments calling for her execution are unconscionable, Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries said in a statement. Arizona legislators must hold this unhinged elected official accountable for contributing to an unsafe environment and risking bodily harm to a sitting member of Congress. There is no place for the incitement of political violence in this country. Republican leaders must reject it immediately. Jayapal herself called Gillette's post appalling, unacceptable, and dangerous in a statement released on social media. It is a call to violence designed to suppress nonviolent democratic organizing against authoritarianism and further polarize the American public for political gain, Jayapal said. Sadly, it makes the world a more dangerous place for each of us. The Washington state lawmaker also went on to say that all political leaders of all parties should denounce it and that she plans to continue doing the trainings on nonviolent organizing that initially drew the attention of Gillette and others. And Catherine Clark, Democratic whip for the U.S. House of Representatives, called the comments dangerous and vile. I condemn this violent rhetoric that has no place in our country, Clark said on X. I hope our Republican leaders will do the same. Arizona Speaker of the House Steve Montenegro and Arizona GOP Chairwoman Gina Swoboda did not respond to a request for comment for this story. The 30-second clip of Jayapal that Gillette was responding to was from a longer video, which was posted online in March, that is part of Jayapal's Resistance Lab series, in which she and others discuss protest movements and nonviolent actions. The video featured a speaker who studied political violence and spoke about nonviolence. Jayapal at one point said anti-Trump Americans should be ready to mount peaceful protests quickly, in the same way labor unions can mount effective strikes and demonstrations to achieve change. The clip was posted by an anonymous right-wing profile and accused Jayapal of making a call to violence because she said protesters should be, quote, strike-ready and street-ready. The Arizona Mirror watched the video in its entirety and found no calls to violence or advocating for overthrowing the government. It was focused on, quote, nonviolent resistance to Trump and advising people on how to do that. Last week, Gillette posted a press release on his Facebook page in which he denied calling for Jayapal's execution and said the initial reporting on his earlier X post was demonstrably false. He accused Jayapal of committing treason and said that any American who says what she did or attempts to overthrow the United States government by engaging in insurrection should face the death penalty under the law. That is not my invention. It is established law, Gillette wrote. Except that it's not. Federal law sets the penalty for insurrection at a maximum of 10 years in prison, and treason is defined as levying war against the United States or giving aid and comfort to the enemy. Federal law says that the penalty for treason can range from 5 years in prison to death. Protesting a president does not meet the legal standard for either insurrection or treason, and the First Amendment protects free speech and peaceful protests. Gillette went on to defend his call for executing Jayapal and other anti-Trump protesters because he called for them to have due process, which he noted is the foundation of the American justice system. I call for the law to be enforced against anyone, regardless of party, who openly advocates for the violent overthrow of the American government, he wrote. Gillette has expressed support for the Trump supporters who stormed the U.S. Capitol in January 2021, violently assaulting police officers and breaking down doors and windows in order to access the building so they could stop Congress from certifying the 2020 election. On several occasions, he has called the 1,600 or so people who were prosecuted and since pardoned by Trump for their actions that day, quote, political prisoners. Gillette's recent comments come after some of his Democratic colleagues have voiced concerns over his rhetoric after he castigated them for calling for civility and unity in the wake of killing of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. In a message to all of his fellow lawmakers that included a racial slur, he placed blame for political violence solely on Democrats and the political left, accusing them of stoking hate and violence against Republicans. The tone was set by your party. Unity is no longer an option, he wrote on September 14th to the 59 other members of the State House. We handed you an olive branch, and you broke it. Your party invited the radicals to the table, and they took over. Now you own them. As the Jays did at Pearl Harbor, radical Muslims on 9/11, your party has woken the sleeping giant. Earlier this month, Gillette also came under fire for Islamophobic comments that led to an ethics complaint that was ultimately dismissed. The Republican chair of the House Ethics Committee said that Gillette had a First Amendment right to say what he wanted on social media without consequence. And that concludes the update on that story. National Dems call for reprisals against AZGOP lawmaker for unconscionable call to hang colleague. You're listening to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week at this time by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Beginning the second half of our show, our first story, David Schweikert abandons Congress to enter Arizona governor's race. Move adds third major GOP candidate as Democrats claim he sees, quote, writing on the wall. By Caitlin Sievers, September 30th, 2025. Longtime Republican U.S. Representative David Schweikert has dropped his congressional re-election bid to run for Arizona governor. Schweikert, who is in his eighth term in Congress, will join U.S. Representative Andy Biggs and businesswoman Karen Taylor Robson in the Republican primary to determine who will face Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs in the 2026 general election. Schweiker told the Arizona Republic that he was tired of the struggle to get anything accomplished in Congress and worried that Robson couldn't win the primary and Biggs couldn't defeat Hobbs, who narrowly beat Republican Carrie Lake to take the governor's office in 2022. Robson lost the 2022 Republican primary to Lake. In an unusual move, President Donald Trump earlier this year endorsed both Biggs, a longtime ally of the president, and Robson in the race for governor of Arizona. That leaves Schweikert as the only major GOP candidate without Trump's backing in a race that is almost certain to be, in large part, a test of loyalty to Trump. Our campaign welcomes Congressman Schweiker to the campaign trail, Robson campaign advisor Jeff Glassburner said in a statement. He is a career politician with a well-documented history of opposing President Trump, including abandoning his district at a critical time when President Trump and House Republicans relied on his presence to secure re-election and maintain our House majority. This comes after earlier this year when he, quote, slept through and didn't vote for the president's marquee piece of legislation, the Big Beautiful Bill. Tyler Bauer, Chief Operating Officer of Turning Point USA, which has backed Biggs, immediately criticized Schweikert and head of the Arizona Republican Party, Gina Swoboda, who he said recruited Schweikert to run against Biggs. Swoboda has denied those accusations, saying she follows the AZ GOP bylaws that bar her from backing candidates in the primary. In his criticism posted on social media, Bauer mentioned the aftermath of the killing of Turning Point USA founder Charlie Kirk, which the far-right organization has used as a catalyst to fundraise and recruit more members. When Charlie was assassinated, I got personal calls from just about every major elected official, Bauer wrote. Some I would consider political opponents. Some I've never spoken to before. I did not get a call from David Schweikert or AZ GOP chair Gina Swoboda. I think that speaks volumes. Bauer also wrote that Schweikert's decision to jump into the governor's race was the kind of thing that costs the GOP seats, and that he only did so because he was likely to lose his re-election bid in the Scottsdale-based Congressional District 1. Schweikert, who was first elected to Congress in 2010, has been among Democrats' top targets in several recent elections. Schweikert leaned into the far-right extremism that Trump brought with him in 2016 and has repeatedly co-sponsored a nationwide abortion ban during his more than a decade as a congressman. He also backed a GOP-crafted budget that called for increasing the retirement age to 69, which would delay Social Security benefits for seniors, though he previously told the Arizona Mirror that he opposes that specific provision. Just weeks ago, Schweikert faced criticism for characterizing Arizonans' anxiety over cuts to Medicaid because of Trump's, quote, Big Beautiful Bill as, quote, whining and bedwetting, and called for additional cuts. Those cuts are expected to result in hundreds of thousands of Arizonans losing their health care coverage and a nationwide cut to Medicaid of around $1 trillion over the next decade. Republicans backed the cuts to health care and food aid programs, among many others, in order to pay for tax cuts for businesses and wealthy Americans. Democrats also called out Schweikert's voting record, saying his chances of winning re-election were low. David Schweikert can see the writing on the wall. House Republicans are doomed. Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee spokesperson Lindsey Riley said in a statement. After voting to gut Arizonans' health care in favor of tax cuts for billionaires, Schweikert knows there's no way voters will let Republicans keep control of Congress. Schweigert's decision is just the latest vote of no confidence in his own colleagues and their toxic agenda. The Copper State War Room, a Democratic PAC PAC aimed at supporting statewide Democrats in 2026, called out Schweigert's support for Trump's tariffs and his vote against releasing the Epstein files. Schweigert did not respond to the Arizona Mirror's request for comment. Schweigert is a former Arizona state legislator and treasurer of Maricopa County. He was a founding member of the House Freedom Caucus, but left it in 2023 because he didn't want to be associated with the far-right Arizona Freedom Caucus. The Federal Election Commission and the House Ethics Committee fined Schweigert $175,000 in 2020 and 2022 for a total of 11 campaign finance violations, according to PolitiFact. He was accused of failing to report loans and allowing campaign money to be used for non-campaign expenses. And that concludes this story. David Schweigert abandons Congress to enter Arizona governor's race. Next up, Planned Parenthood stops accepting Arizona Medicaid as Trump ban takes effect. By Gloria Rebecca Gomez, September 29, 2025. Arizonans enrolled in AHCCCS, the state's Medicaid program, will no longer be able to visit their local Planned Parenthood clinic for an STI test or a cancer screening starting this week. The organization's decision to stop accepting Medicaid coverage comes as a provision in President Donald Trump's fiscal plan barring abortion providers from receiving Medicaid funding goes into effect Wednesday. The prohibition sets a one-year ban on Medicaid funding for any nonprofit healthcare providers who perform abortions and receive more than $800,000 from Medicaid in 2023. While Planned Parenthood isn't specifically mentioned in the GOP spending plan's language, it is widely viewed as an attempt to defund the organization. One-third of the organization's revenue comes from state or federal funding, which pays for reproductive health care services like contraception and pregnancy tests. Federal law prevents Medicaid funding from being used to reimburse providers for abortions, except for in limited cases involving rape, incest, or life-threatening emergencies. April Donovan, the interim president of the Arizona branch of Planned Parenthood, criticized politicians for targeting the organization and said that the move to defund the clinics would jeopardize the health care of women across the state who already face significant difficulty accessing routine care. Planned Parenthood operates 7 clinics in the state, but only 4 offer abortions. The majority of the clinics are located in the Metro Phoenix area, but one is in Tucson and another in Flagstaff, providing more options for women across the state. Let's be clear. The people who would be hurt most by the administration restricting us from caring for patients with Medicaid coverage are those who already face hurdles to getting the care they need. Black and Latino communities, LGBTQ+ people, people who live in rural or medically underserved areas, and people who have low incomes, Donovan warned in an emailed statement. In 2021, approximately 1 in 10 women used Medicaid to receive family planning services at a Planned Parenthood clinic. Roughly 1.9 million Arizonans, 1 in 4 people, receive health care through the Arizona Health Care Cost Containment System, or AHCCCS. Over the summer, the prohibition was briefly put on hold after a Massachusetts district judge ruled it likely violates the U.S. Constitution's, quote, Bill of Attainder Clause, which forbids Congress from punishing entities without a trial. But that decision was overturned on September 11th, with a federal appellate court allowing the Trump administration to move forward with its bid to block Medicaid funds from going to Planned Parenthood. The organization estimates the prohibition could result in the closure of as many as 200 clinics and jeopardize care for more than 1.1 million Medicaid patients. And that concludes this story. Planned Parenthood stops accepting Arizona Medicaid as Trump ban takes effect. Next up, Arizona's community health centers were built on Medicaid. Now they face uncertainty. By Jasmine Demers of the Arizona Center for Investigative Reporting, September 30th, 2025. When 35-year-old Jessica Rhodes walked into a residential treatment program in Phoenix 3 months ago, she had almost nothing left. She was broke, addicted to meth, and terrified of losing her 4-year-old daughter. "I was at my rock bottom," she said. "I was sitting in a room trying to get high, but I couldn't because my veins were all shot out." A week later, she checked herself into LifeWell, a residential treatment program run by Terrace Health. With Medicaid covering her treatment, housing, and primary care, Rhodes is now sober, preparing to move into her own home and starting a new job. "If it was not for this facility and these specific people working here, I could be dead," she said. Terrace Health is one of 24 federally qualified community health centers, CHCs, in Arizona that provide care to low-income patients. Together, they operate nearly 240 sites and serve about 870,000 patients, offering everything from prenatal care and vaccinations to behavioral health services and chronic disease management. Arizona CHCs rely on Medicaid more than centers almost anywhere else in the country. Last year, 43% of their patients were covered through the Arizona Health Care Cost Containment System, the state's Medicaid agency. Those visits bring in more than $700 million a year, about two-thirds of all patient revenue. Even with federal grants and other funding in the mix, Medicaid still pays for 54% of everything Arizona's clinics do, the fourth highest rate in the country as of 2023. When you take a state like Arizona, where about one in every five Medicaid enrollees in the state is actually served by a health center, it's a great example of how reliant health centers are on Medicaid funding, says Fagel Jacobs, a national health policy expert and director of the Geiger-Gibson Program in Community Health. The state's health centers don't just serve Medicaid patients, they depend on Medicaid payments to survive. Now, the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, a sweeping federal tax and spending measure central to President Donald Trump's second-term agenda, threatens to upend the clinics at the core of Arizona's health safety net. The state could lose an estimated $34 billion in Medicaid funding over the next decade under the statute, signed into law on July 4th. More than 300,000 of the state's most vulnerable patients may ultimately lose coverage after eligibility rules tighten and new work requirements take effect late next year. For community health centers, that could mean millions in lost revenue, enough to force some to reduce hours, lay off staff, cut services, or even close their doors. Though the losses would be felt statewide, they're likely to hit rural communities hardest. Roughly 40% of Arizona's health centers are located outside metropolitan areas where patients can face drives of 90 minutes or more to reach affordable care. The impact of closures and cutbacks in those regions could ripple far beyond community health centers, straining emergency departments, rural hospitals, and private practices statewide, according to Karen Hoffman Tepper, president and CEO of Terrace Health. "What we're really talking about is destabilizing the entire healthcare system, not just harming those individuals that are currently receiving Medicaid," Tepper said. Medicaid and community health centers have been linked from the start. Both were created in 1965 as part of President Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty and rooted in the civil rights movement, with CHCs designed to provide a national infrastructure for health equity and Medicaid intended to cover care for low-income populations. More recently, Arizona's expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act added hundreds of thousands of patients to the program, fueling the growth of CHCs across the state. Policy experts warn the new federal law could reverse much of that progress. Starting in December 2026, the law will require states to conduct Medicaid eligibility checks twice a year and impose additional work requirements on adults who gained coverage under the Affordable Care Act. Supporters of the new rules argue the changes are necessary to rein in costs and reduce fraud. They say work requirements will encourage self-sufficiency and ensure taxpayer dollars are directed to those who need them the most. But Dr. Daniel Dirksen, director of the University of Arizona's Center for Rural Health, said the paperwork alone could push thousands of qualified Arizonans off the rolls. Many are likely to lose coverage not because they're ineligible, but because they failed to update or renew their information on time, he said. Jacobs, with the Geiger-Gibson Program in Community Health, described the upcoming work requirements as particularly onerous. To stay covered, many enrollees will need to prove they work at least 80 hours a month, a difficult hurdle for older adults, people in poor health, or those without steady jobs or places to live. Her concerns are backed by research. She and other analysts found that 5.6 million health center patients who live in Medicaid expansion states like Arizona could lose coverage over the next 5 years, resulting in $32 billion in lost revenue. Even for those who manage to keep their coverage, access could shrink. The law will reduce the federal government's share of Medicaid funding in the coming years, forcing Arizona to either spend more state dollars or cut services. That could mean lower payments to providers, fewer covered services like dental or mental health care, and additional financial pressure on clinics and hospitals. I think we're going to see staffing reductions. We're going to definitely see site closures and consolidations, and we may see health center closures, Jacob said. In some states, we know these things are already happening. Community health centers rely on a fragile mix of Medicaid, Medicare, commercial insurance, and sliding fee payments to operate. Even a 1% decrease in Medicaid coverage for center patients and a corresponding 1% spike in uncompensated care could mean a $1 million annual shortfall for clinics, said Lisa Nieri, Chief Programs Officer for the Arizona Alliance for Community Health Centers. The math worries patients like Rose, who depends on her Taros Health Center for ongoing substance use treatment and primary care. The clinic has the highest percentage of Medicaid patients of any health center in the state. It's life and death for us, Rhodes said. Not only is it the treatment part, but it's the housing while we're here. It's the medication while we're here. Together, those supports help people in recovery get in the right mindset to be able to participate and be an active member of society, she said. If that's taken away, lives will be lost. Any drop in primary care access will lead to a decline in overall population health, according to Tepper, the Taros Health CEO. When patients lose coverage or access to clinics, they often delay or skip preventative care, leading over time to higher costs, longer waits, and greater strain on remaining clinics and emergency rooms. Rural regions are likely to feel those effects most acutely. In many community health centers, they serve as the front line of care for people who might otherwise go without, said Jessica Yanow, president and CEO of the Arizona Alliance for Community Health Centers. Some residents already travel up to 2 hours to see a doctor, with access to certain specialized services like prenatal care or perinatal care particularly limited. Health centers are more than clinics. They are lifelines, Yanow said. Losing them would mean losing vital access to care where it's needed most. Access to already scarce hospitals is also at risk in rural areas. 5 of Arizona's 17 federally designated critical access hospitals in Page, Winslow, Bisbee, Nogales, and Globe could close due to Medicaid cuts, a University of North Carolina study found. People will lose their coverage, but they will not lose their health care needs, said Mike Renaud, CEO of Valley del Sol Community Health in Phoenix. They will continue to need services. The problem is there will be no reimbursement for it. How do you sustain that system? The answer is you can't. Most of the law's major changes won't take effect until after the 2026 election. How much they sting will largely depend on how Arizona chooses to implement them. The state will have far fewer dollars to run its Medicaid program, Tepper said, leaving leaders to choose between backfilling the gap with state funds or imposing cuts. AHCCCS is asking for more than $71 million in next year's state budget solely to fund the staff and system updates needed to comply with the new federal mandates. Governor Katie Hobbs, a Democrat, has said Arizona doesn't have the capacity to fully replace the federal dollars it will lose, and her budget priorities often clash with those of the Republican-controlled legislature, which will play a decisive role in how the state responds. Renaud said state leaders and healthcare providers alike will need to work together to soften the blow. It is a state problem. It is a managed care problem. It is a provider problem. It is a hospital problem. Frankly, it is an employer problem, he said. The whole entire community is going to have to come together to solve it. For healthcare center leaders, the question is not whether the cuts will hit, but how deeply. That uncertainty makes it hard to plan ahead. In the meantime, organizations like Taros Health and Valley de Sol are expanding their eligibility teams to help people enroll and stay enrolled in Medicaid. We're not going to stop caring for people because that's what we're here for, Renaud said. We will be under significant stress financially if there is no solution to coverage for these folks. The stakes are especially personal for Jessica Rhodes, who is starting a new life with her daughter. Recovery is something she works at every day, she said, and the support of her community health center has been essential. She worries about what happens if that safety net frays. You have to chase your recovery the way you chase those drugs, she said, and without these people and these places that help us, there's no chance. And there is a note here that Adriana Navarro, an investigative reporter, and Roy W. Howard Fellow contributed reporting to this story. This article first appeared on Arizona Center for Investigative Reporting and is republished here under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 4.0 International License. And that concludes this story. Arizona's community health centers were built on Medicaid. Now they face uncertainty. And finally, we have an update on a story that we've brought to you a few times before. Scottsdale residents set to sue over a new state law that blocks a vote on Axon headquarters by Jared McDonald Evoy, September 24th, 2025. After the Scottsdale City Council tabled plans to move forward with a lawsuit, instead voting to file a notice of claim to reserve the right to sue the state over a law that cancels a public vote on the proposed headquarters for law enforcement technology company Axon, residents are heading to court themselves. Axon lobbied state lawmakers earlier this year to bar voters in every city and town in Arizona from being able to challenge zoning and development decisions. But the company's proposed legislation failed to garner enough support, so Axon and its allies pivoted instead to merely stripping away the right of Scottsdale voters to challenge the police weapons manufacturing headquarters project near Hayden Road and the Loop 101. In addition to the firm's international headquarters, the project is set to include a luxury hotel and roughly 1,900 apartments. Governor Katie Hobbs signed Senate Bill 1543 into law in April, blocking a vote on the project. Local activists, backed by a signature gathering effort linked to a California labor union, gathered more than 25,000 signatures to send the rezoning decision made by a lame duck city council in 2024. The votes for the project came from councilors who had been voted out of office, to the ballot in a voter referendum, which must happen by November 2026. That group, Taxpayers Against Awful Apartment Zoning Exemptions, announced Wednesday that they intended to file a lawsuit on Thursday that challenges the law, which is set to take effect on Friday. So we'll have to leave that story here for now, but it sounds like we're going to be having an update pretty soon. And that's all the time we're going to have for this week's edition of the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week at this time by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Remember, if you missed any part of this program or want to hear a story again, you can go to our website, sunsounds.org, and click on demand podcasts. And you know you can take Sun Sounds with you by getting our stream and podcasts on our Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. You can also hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. And don't forget to spread the word to your friends and neighbors that anyone who is unable to read print for any reason can find lots of great programming on Sun Sounds 24/7. Have them check us out at sunsounds.org. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Stay tuned for more great programming from Sun Sounds of Arizona, and we'll look forward to having you join us next week.